Coming up, Pope Francis in the U.S. Tim Lawton reports on what Francis has been saying and doing and what the response has been. And with Francis at this weekend's World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia, Deborah Potter looks at some of the controversial family issues facing the Catholic Church. Plus, Kim and I talk about the impact of the Pope's visit with Reverend Thomas Rees, senior analyst at National Catholic Reporter.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. This busy week of Pope Francis in the U.S., appealing to Congress and the U.N., encouraging his bishops, greeting the poor, and warming the hearts of many thousands of admirers. Kim Lawton begins our coverage.
With wall-to-wall media coverage and hundreds of thousands of people flocking to catch even a glimpse of him, Pope Francis seems to have captivated much of the nation.
He's a spiritual giant. He's not just a Catholic. I think he's a prophet for these times.
And like a prophet of old, Francis has been calling the U.S. and the entire world to move in a new path, one that seeks a better world for all people. At the United Nations Friday, Francis outlined a host of serious problems that need to be addressed to ensure that the future will be secure for all.
And so it will if the representatives of the states can set aside partisan and ideological interests and sincerely strive to serve the common good.
In all of his major policy speeches, Francis has called for peace, mercy, and justice. And he's stressed his now familiar priority issues, concern for the poor and disadvantaged, immigration, refugees, and the environment. President Obama thanked Francis for his moral authority.
In your humility, your embrace of simplicity, in the gentleness of your words, in the generosity of your spirit, we see a living example of Jesus' teachings.
Liberals have been pleased, but Francis cannot be put in any rigid political boxes. At the White House, he also raised the U.S. bishops' concerns about maintaining religious liberty and supporting the institution of marriage. Both are key issues for conservatives.
Mr. Speaker, the Pope of the Holy See.
As the first pope to address a joint meeting of Congress, Francis praised much of America's legacy. He referred to Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream for the nation.
And I am happy that America continues to be, for many, a land of dreams.
Francis again raised his priority issues, and he repeated his concern for the family, which he said is being threatened, perhaps as never before, from within and without. The Pope has been met with enthusiastic crowds at every stop. Many of those unable to attend in person have been trying to participate in the visit in other ways. In places including D.C.'s Franciscan Monastery, people have been gathering to watch various events. Others have been doing special service projects in honor of the Pope. Many Catholics have high hopes for the lasting impact of this visit.
I would like our church to unite and be behind him and hopefully get more people back to the church.
Hispanic Catholics, who make up about 34% of the U.S. church, say this Latin American pope has been especially meaningful for their community.
We also are incredibly moved because at a time when the discourse around immigration has been dominated by fear and hatred, that he has come and breathed new life into the debate.
Non-Catholic people of faith have also been engaged in this papal visit at an unprecedented level. Religious groups across the spectrum are hoping to gain momentum for their key issues by tying them to the Pope's agenda.
Restoring hope.
As the Pope spoke before Congress, faith-based activists helped lead a rally in front of the Capitol, urging politicians to follow up on Francis's concern for the environment by adopting new policies to address climate change. Reverend Gerald Durley is a veteran of the civil rights movement.
He is that kind of energizing, kinetic force that's inspired all of us, regardless of race, color, faith. That's Pope Francis's, I think, his calling.
Interfaith humanitarian leaders praised the Pope's focus on poor people and pledged to keep working on that issue. They called on the nation to shift priorities in order to end hunger and poverty by the year 2030.
This is an extraordinary moment. The leader of a major religion in the world who espouses these same causes is here speaking about them.
Still, the visit hasn't been without controversy. During a prayer service at St. Matthew's Cathedral, Francis told the bishops he supported their generous commitment to bring healing to victims of the sex abuse crisis. This generated an angry response from the survivors of those abused by priests, who claimed that, in fact, the bishops, quote, have shown cowardice and callousness and continue to do so. Another point of controversy was Native American reaction to the Pope's elevation to sainthood of Father Junipero Serra, an 18th century Franciscan friar who helped bring Catholicism to California. It was the first canonization in the U.S. Father Serra is honored by many Catholics, especially Hispanic Catholics, for his missionary work. Father Ken Leveroni helped lead the effort for him to be declared a saint.
Despite hardships, despite physical difficulties, despite political difficulties, Junipero Serra always went forward and was determined to fulfill his dream in following the footsteps of Jesus Christ, and in particular following the footsteps of St. Paul and St. Francis of Assisi.
Many Native Americans argued that early missionaries brutally imposed their religion and helped to destroy indigenous cultures. During his homily, spoken in Spanish, Francis said Serra had sought to protect the dignity of the Native community. About 25% of Native Americans are Catholic. Some of them called for healing from the wounds of the past.
The intergenerational hurts that have stemmed really right from the first encounter on this continent, way back in 1492. We reflect, we remember, but let us let go. Let us heal, and we need to move forward.
For many, the most important part of the visit so far has not been the speeches or the meetings, but rather the images of Francis as a pastor. Images of him instructing his security detail to bring forward a small immigrant girl who had slipped through the barricade.
God bless America.
Images of him leaving the halls of Congress to visit Catholic charities, where he was surrounded by homeless people, immigrants, and needy families.
Much of what Pope Francis is about is not necessarily about what he says. It's about what he does. The quote that's attributed to St. Francis of Assisi is, "Preach always and use words when you need to." I think Pope Francis is a great example of that.
And many Catholics say that example is touching the entire world. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
The Pope's visit to Washington and New York began with an invitation to Philadelphia to attend this week's World Meeting of Families. Deborah Potter reports now on the pressure from many Catholics for the Church to change its rules, its canon law, relating to such concerns as marriage annulment, gay marriage, and divorce.
Born and raised Catholic, Mary Margaret O'Connor thought her marriage would be for life. When she divorced, going to Mass wasn't easy.
You walk into a church, it's loaded with families. So if you're divorced and you're alone, you walk into this, and there's just so many reminders of what you once had but don't have anymore.
Even so, she kept going, but some of her divorced friends stayed away.
So I started saying, all right, to my friends who are divorced Catholics, first word that pops into your head, you're a divorced Catholic. Excommunicated. What? Excommunicated. Oh, come on, we are not excommunicated. Yeah, excommunicated.
The amount of misinformation about marriage in the Catholic tradition boggles my imagination.
Father James Halsted teaches a course on marriage at DePaul University in Chicago. Divorced Catholics, he says, are not excommunicated, deprived of all sacraments, and they haven't been for more than a century. But the perception lingers. largely because the church teaches that marriage is a symbol of Christ's relationship with the church and cannot be broken.
The Roman Catholic tradition is no. You're participating in something bigger than you are. That is a natural institution created by God in the beginning, sanctified by Christ, a sacrament, and you're part of it. You didn't invent it, and it's not yours to make whatever you want. That's a colorful conversation when you do premarital counseling.
Any divorced Christian wanting to remarry in the Catholic Church must have the previous marriage annulled, decreed invalid by church authorities. If they remarry without an annulment, they're considered to have committed the mortal sin of adultery and are banned from taking communion. How many American Catholics are affected? Researchers at Georgetown University provided the numbers. More than one in four Catholic marriages in this country end in divorce. That's a lower rate than the general population, but it's still 11 million people. An annulment would allow them to remarry and remain full members of the church. But only 15% of divorced American Catholics have gone to the trouble of getting one.
You go through all the pain that you went through while you were going through a divorce.
Dodie Carney had her marriage annulled 7 years after her civil divorce. She was never denied communion, but she had divorced friends who were.
I think the church was concerned more about legalism and instead of compassion for the individual. And when you're going through a hard time, the best thing you can have is Jesus inside of you and receiving communion. That's when you need it the most, is when you're hurting.
American Catholics have long been out of step with the Vatican on major family issues. Almost two-thirds of Catholics in the United States believe couples living together should be allowed to receive communion, according to a recent survey, and three-quarters want the church to approve the use of contraception. Some Catholics who want the church to change its stance on family issues have taken heart from recent actions and comments by Pope Francis.
Nell'amore e nella verità verso i battezzati che hanno stabilito una nuova convivenza dopo il fallimento del matrimonio sacramentale. In effetti, queste persone non sono affatto scomunicate. Non sono scomunicate.
He's made annulments simpler and quicker. He's called divorce sometimes morally necessary and said abortion can be forgiven. And of homosexuality, the Pope asked, "Who am I to judge?"
That's how the connection was made.
Oh.
Luis Garcia grew up Catholic and studied to become a priest, but he did feel judged as a gay man and walked away from the Catholic Church 30 years ago.
Bottom line is, I could never show up to church with a boyfriend. I could never imagine having my union recognized. I had to keep details of who I was separate from my spiritual life. And as someone who has served in the church all of his life, that made me feel dishonest.
Like many former Catholics, Garcia found a new church home, in his case, an Episcopal church, where the liturgy feels familiar and where same-sex couples can marry.
Easily 40% of the members of this congregation started their faith journey and their life journey in the Roman Catholic Church and now worship here. So it's not just me, it's a lot of us.
According to a recent survey, only 1 in 10 Catholics who leave the church ever returns.
They would rather go to Willow Creek or another non-denominational church because those churches have really helped them rebuild their lives, where the Catholic Church has not helped to rebuild anyone's life. It's hurt people more than it's helped.
O'Connor has found an ally in her parish priest, who's helping her organize a new ministry for divorced Catholics.
We need to bring people back into the communion with the church and around the Lord's table, and I think that will be beneficial, not just for us as a parish, but as us for a church in the world.
On the one hand, you know, in a church where there are declining numbers of people, why not open the doors and be as welcoming as possible to people who really want to be a part of this community? And yet, on the other hand, if you allow for wiggle, more than wiggle room, if you allow for some changes in practice, what does that do? Let's stick with this for a minute.
Good.
Because this is significant epistemologically. So what does it mean to be in a particular standpoint?
Susan Ross chairs the theology department at Loyola University, Chicago.
The church is, in a sense, caught between its own rock and its own hard place. Justice, on the one hand, requires that the canonical requirements for marriage be followed. Mercy, on the other hand, says, wait a minute, these people want to be part of a worshiping community. They want to participate fully.
Pope Francis has urged a pastoral response to remarried Catholics and gays, but he hasn't spelled out what that means.
He knows what can change politically. He knows what can change doctrinally, what can change canonically, and he's a rather shrewd political guy. I have no idea what's going on in his head, and I think he likes it that way.
I pray for him every day, because it's very brave for him to come out and say, we must do more to welcome back divorced Catholics, and that divorce is sometimes morally necessary. So he's the first pope that's ever said that. My prayer is that everyone will listen to him. Just because he says it doesn't mean that you'll have the archbishops and the cardinals following suit.
A bishop's meeting next month will decide whether to recommend changes in the church's positions on family issues. Conservative and liberal bishops already are publicly at odds over what to do. And the gospel reading for opening day, one of the clearest statements in the New Testament, forbidding divorce. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Deborah Potter in Chicago.
We want now to try to sum up the impact of the Pope's trip. Our managing editor, Kim Lawton, is here, and so is Father Tom Reese, a longtime expert on the Vatican and the Church. He is senior analyst for National Catholic Reporter. Tom, Kim, welcome to you. Nice to have you back here. There were a lot of messages that the Pope brought to Congress and to the UN. What was the thread? Was there a common denominator?
I think the thread was his desire to be a prophetic voice, to talk about the issues that face our nation and the world. And these are issues like climate change, concern for the poor, the refugee crisis, the immigrants. These were things that he held up because these are the people that are very close to his heart.
And it was interesting to me that everything went back to the Catholic teaching of human dignity. So whether he's talking about the environment or immigration, everything he tied back to the individual and how it affects people, and that we should be, when we make the policies, these big international policies, we should be mindful of how that touches people and especially vulnerable people. That was the thread, no matter what issue he was talking about, it came back to that.
And he visited a lot of vulnerable people, too.
The contrast between his visit on Capitol Hill and his visit at the Catholic Charities homeless shelter was dramatic. Here with all the power brokers, the powerful people, he had a challenging message. But then when he went and visited with the homeless, we saw them crowd around him and he embraced them.
Yeah.
That was really everywhere.
And it didn't seem like something was staged.
No. These are his people. These are the people that he's most comfortable with. I think he was happy to be off the hill and back, back with the real people of Washington.
Tom, when you talk to people who got close to the Pope, they were almost, they had a profound experience, and they spoke about it, and it was more than just seeing a celebrity. There was something, and words fail me, but you may be able to describe what this sense was, this feeling was that people had.
Well, he's not an ordinary celebrity. Celebrities are all about selling themselves. They're all about me. And this Pope is about selling Jesus, about selling the gospel. And when he's with other people, it's not about him, it's about them. And you can just see that in the way he reaches out to people, the way he interacts with them. And it's this authenticity. He's the real deal, you know. And he not only preaches, he walks the talk.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say one of the things that I was really struck by this past week is the extent to which some of those same feelings are extended beyond the Catholic fold. So that you had Protestants. There was a poll that came out that said that a lot of Protestants have a more favorable view of the Catholic Church because of Pope Francis. Now, they don't agree. They're not more favorable toward the theology of the Catholic Church. But, you know, just that presence, his personality has given them a more positive impact. So many people, Jewish groups, Hindu groups, Muslim groups, were also engaged in this visit, and that was really interesting. It was something that spread beyond the church itself.
And but this feeling, this experience of spiritual experience that people had went way beyond words.
Absolutely. I mean, he models what it means to be a Christian. He models what it means to be like Jesus. And that's what people see in this man. That's why they're so attracted to him. And they see him as so different from the typical celebrity who's an egomaniac. This is a man who's totally humble, totally selfless, and reaching out to people and caring about people.
It'll be interesting, though, to see the extent to which this feeling, this, you know, spiritual connection people have, to what extent that actually translates into their daily lives. Is that going to make a difference, having touched Pope Francis? Is that going to make someone pray more or spend more time in the church or get more involved in ministries to the poor? And that's something that, you know, is it just this temporary high or is it something that is profoundly going to change the church?
Well, that's very important for the Catholic Church because we know that 1 out of 3 people who were raised Catholics have left the church. Now, these people who have left the church like Pope Francis, and they're thinking, well, should I give the church another chance? Well, the problem is the Pope's very important in the Catholic Church, but he's not the Catholic Church.
And he's not in their local parish every Sunday.
And that's where we live our faith, is in the local parish. So when they come back, they want to meet somebody like Pope Francis. And if the clergy and the bishops and the people aren't more like Pope Francis, namely, or like Jesus, more welcoming, compassionate, loving, they're going to turn around and never come back.
Tom, our time is up. I'm sorry. Thanks to Kim Lawton, our managing editor, and to Tom Reese of National Catholic Reporter. In other news, this year's annual Hajj, or pilgrimage to Mecca, ended in tragedy this week. More than 700 people were killed in a stampede during the final Hajj rituals. More than 800 others were injured. This was the deadliest such incident in more than 2 decades. More than 2 million Muslims had gathered to participate in this year's Hajj. In Europe, government and humanitarian officials continued to seek solutions to the burgeoning migrant crisis. At an emergency European Union summit this week, leaders debated new ways to, quote, regain control of the borders. According to the UN High Commission on Refugees, nearly 500,000 migrants have arrived in Europe this year by sea alone. Thousands more keep pouring in every day. Most are from Syria, Iraq, and North Africa. Meanwhile, Secretary of State John Kerry announced that the U.S. will now take in at least 85,000 refugees in 2016 and 100,000 in 2017. Several faith groups praised the expanded U.S. effort, but said it still isn't enough to meet the crisis. On our calendar, for Muslims, one of the most important holidays, the 3-day festival of Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice, came at the end of the Hajj. The festival recalls Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son in obedience to God. And at sundown Sunday, Jews begin observing the 7-day festival of Sukkot, also known as the Festival of Tabernacles. Sukkot features sukkahs, or booths, which, according to tradition, represent the fragile shelters built by the Israelites during their 40-year wandering in the desert after their exodus from Egypt. Finally, Phyllis Tickle died this past week. She was a brilliant and enthusiastic lecturer and writer about American religious life who saw in the decline of church membership what she labeled an emerging church. She herself prayed every few hours and published a popular collection of prayers called The Divine Hours. In all, she wrote 40 books. Phyllis's love of life brought her many friends, among them those of us who produce this program. She will be greatly missed. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's much more on our website, including our special blog covering the Pope's visit. You can also listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from the multi-religious service with Pope Francis at the Ground Zero Memorial in New York.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.